Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the July 25 edition of Commodity Week. The corn crop across the United States appears to be in really good shape. How much lower can the prices go? We'll talk about that and much more today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk with Ray Jenkins of Cargill out of Eddyville, Iowa. Our panelists today include Merrill Crowley from Crowley Commodities from Watseka, Illinois, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Well, let's begin our commentary this afternoon with this question as we take a look at basis across the United States. I'm wondering if each of you believe basis will widen or narrow over the next 3 to 4 weeks, and maybe we should start with Dale Durkles, and this would be as it relates to corn.
You know, I think that's sort of a mixed bag because there's a couple of things going on in here. Basis is weakening a little bit here as we've been seeing things, but with the low prices, I'm also starting to see interest in buying corn out there. And so you still have producers that need to market some corn, but end users that are looking at prices are going, you know, this is darned attractive. And so I think it's kind of a mixed bag right now. Transportation is going to be maybe the one negative that will hurt it a little.
Merrill Crowley, your thoughts?
Well, I think locally around here we've seen basis hold pretty good for the old crop. You would have to think that if we keep confirming large amounts, larger crops as we go through the year, that basis would decline, widen out as we move into the fall.
And Greg Johnson of the Andersons.
Yeah, I would agree that basis probably looks to get a little weaker. The crop size is huge. Farmers have built more space. Elevators have built more space. But the last few years we've gone in with a relatively empty pipeline, and that will not be the case this year. You throw on top of that the possible logistical problems with poor railroad service in the fall, and it sure feels like basis will work wider as we get into the fall. The only difference would be if the farmers are stubborn sellers and they are able to hold all this crop off the market. That would be the one thing that might prevent this basis from getting weaker.
Are you of a mind, Greg, that we will bottom the corn market before, during, or after the harvest season?
Well, the funds are still long, and the farmers obviously are still long. If they decide to capitulate, if the funds get even corn like they have beans and wheat, we could see a low come in prior to fall harvest. We haven't seen that yet, so I think we're still going lower until we see some evidence that farmers and funds lighten up on their long positions.
Any thought, Crowley, on whether that'll happen or not?
I would agree with what he said. It does sound logical. I know when you look back into history, a lot of lows in September in years like this, and it usually comes around the time for a report, September report, October report, but it's not uncommon for September and sometimes even August to be a low.
Dale Durkles, did you see the cattle on feed number that came out this afternoon that showed the number of cattle and calves available, the lowest since the series began in 1973?
You mean the cattle inventory number?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. You know, there's going to be a lot of uncertainty about this, but I did look across and two things jumped out at me. Number one, you know, the cattle number was less than what Ron Plain, who was the only one that put out some kind of an estimate on this, expected to see. But I also looked back, the heifers being withheld were less than what he looked for, which I thought was interesting. So we really haven't in a big way yet started herd rebuilding. Calf crop was a little light. And last but not least, I look back at those feeder supplies on July 1 standing outside the feedlots, they actually were down a little bit more than they were on that similar figure back in January relative to where we were 2 years ago, the last time we had a mid-year July report, which says, you know, we're still tight on the feeder inventory here at this point, and you know, that says that the cattle market's going to stay fairly robust, but from a corn demand standpoint, we don't have as many mouths out there to feed either.
And when you tally that with the poultry numbers and the hog numbers, do you come up with enough to continue to chew through a lot of corn over the next 3 months?
Yeah, I think, you know, you've got enough demand out there, and that's the one thing that's always a misnomer from a lot of people when they look at the USDA line as far as feed consumption. That's feed and residual, and it's really your residual that has a lot more volatility in it than the feed number itself, and I can show you this through some things, although you can't specifically pinpoint the data. So I don't know whether there's any real concern that, you know, our feed number is going to decline a whole lot based on these numbers we have today.
Merrill, when you took a look at the week, what were the couple of top things that you talked to your clients about that were top-of-the-line news, the inventory number this afternoon, maybe the DDGs during the week? What else?
Oh, that's a good question. It wasn't a whole lot new. We're just trying to decide where the bottom's going to come. We did see, you know, the MIRs being where they have to have it registered in order for China to accept it. That's going to keep that at bay. The talk of possible increase in ethanol production. I thought that was kind of interesting, although I don't think the Republicans are going to, well, the way Congress has been getting along with each other, I don't think anything's going to pass for a while.
Hey, Greg Johnson, when you take all of this into account and you start to think about, and China has not been taking DDGs for a bit, but you start to think about what this really means, is that a Western Corn Belt function where most of those DDGs might be coming out of there? How much goes down the Mississippi River? Does it really make any difference?
Well, I think it does make a difference, and you're right. It is mainly a Western Corn Belt thing. That's where most of the ethanol plants are. So it does have an impact because if we can't move our DDGs, you know, that displaces some kind of feed usage here in the United States. So it all works together, and it would be nice if we could get this situation resolved sooner rather than later.
It would be nice to resolve it, but Dale, I'm wondering, because as we alluded to, this looks like it may be a Western Corn Belt function. They're already backed up. They can't get trains to move corn or anything else out for a good part. Does it matter very much to you?
You know, this whole DDG thing I found rather curious this week, and I've been gone for about a week now. But coming in, reading the news, and everybody took this news about China going to demand certificates guaranteeing that any DDGs are free of MIR 162 if anybody's going to actually sell it to them. Rather interesting from the perspective, they already have been out of the market. And everybody said, oh, this is a bear. But the other flip side of this, you know, you really step back from the fray and you ask yourself the question, are they looking for a way to maybe start getting around this without having to approve that GMO technology for imports into their country? In other words, you're kind of wondering if they aren't looking for a way to try to stimulate or jumpstart getting some DDGs flowing back to them again. Otherwise, why do it? They already stopped issuing import permits.
Oh, interesting. Huh. Well, it'll be something to watch and think of. Let's have our friend from Cargill at Eddyville, Iowa, Ray Jenkins, join us this afternoon and take up our discussion as well. Hi, Ray. How are you today?
We had a beautiful rain event here in the eastern third of the state. We took some and passed the rest on to Illinois.
We are getting a bit of rain at this hour, or at least it did on my way in, just a sprinkle or two. What do the conditions on the ground look like in your part of the world? You're in the south central part of, right on the line there, of Iowa and Missouri.
Right. We're right at the break point between the south central and the southeast crop districts here in the state. And, oh, let's call well, the southeastern quadrant of the state, probably as good of crop conditions as we've seen. We certainly are on track for near record or record corn yields in south central and southeast Iowa.
Merrill Crowley, do you have a question for Ray?
Yeah. What does it look like on west of you? You're a little closer to that area. We keep hearing how it's dry out there. I know when I look at the maps and everything, it doesn't seem quite as dry as last year, but what is your opinion of the area out there and the dryness?
Well, certainly as you get to far western Iowa, they are enduring some pretty high temperatures here today into the 90s, and they're going to need a drink of water. It certainly sounds like dry land conditions in Nebraska or in a condition where some of that crop could actually be going backwards if they don't get some rain very quickly.
Dale Durkles?
Ray, what do you and your people think about this latest twist in this ongoing development of China and DDGs, because you're involved in the ethanol business?
Well, certainly any time you have a market participant that doesn't want to kind of like act like the rest of the crowd, you're going to have hiccups and issues involved there. It is interesting that they're asking for these certificates, which is something that, according to what I can read in the press, is a almost a virtual impossibility to provide. I kind of am in the camp that I think that those Chinese corn supplies may be as significantly larger than what we expected, and they're trying to work their way through some things.
Greg Johnson?
Hey, Ray, we're concerned here in Central Illinois about rail car availability this fall. I was just wondering how that was impacting you. I know the margins are good for ethanol. You can probably afford to pay more for cars than what some of the grain elevators can. And what do you foresee the situation being this fall? And, you know, are we going to be able to see some cars that we haven't seen here throughout the summer based on the ethanol usage?
Well, one of the things we're trying to coach our farmers that we deal with here is that the rail logistics problems, which seem to be confined to the Dakotas and the northern part of the United States, that is eventually going to be affecting all of us here. So even though we run primarily a truck house here for inbound corn, we depend on a lot of rail for outbound sweetener, ethanol, other product cars there. And as we've seen, barge rates and rail values go higher, it does not feel to me like anybody through the heart of the Midwest is going to escape the effect of a transportation system that's under stress.
Hey, I have a question for you related to PepsiCo and their advertising campaign with product Pepsi made with sugar. Does that have an impact on the marketplace very much, do you suppose?
I think there's been some previous trial runs for products like that, and they've had a rather minor effect. In fact, it seems like a lot of those programs run for a little while, and then they kind of fall off the shelf there. But certainly high fructose demand in the United States is steady at best and in a slow decline.
And then I suppose I should preface, now that we've asked the question, your plant does produce high fructose sugar, right?
Yes, yes. We actually are very large. That's our major product.
Okay. Dale Durkles, you have a question?
Ray, you know, when you step back from the fray and you look at the price of corn, what's your overall take on where we are now? Do you think there's a lot more downside risk in this mix yet?
Well, if this yield actually comes in at 170 to 173 or something like that, I think as I mentioned, because of the transportation woes, there's going to be a lot of places not be able to move grain the way they want to. And I think we could see some really wide basis levels develop for a period of time. I'm concerned that also that if we would break through this 360 on the December futures, that there's significant downside here as well.
And Greg Johnson, another question?
Yeah, Ray, the last 3 years we've had less than ideal growing conditions, and markets have rallied through the summer. This year, not the case. Farmers, at least here, seem to be undersold on both old crop and new crop corn. Is it the same situation out there? Do you get the sense that farmers don't have enough new crop corn sold, or have they done a better job of marketing throughout the year?
No, I think what you've said there, Greg, is true for farmers in general throughout the Midwest. We think there's still a significant amount of old crop corn that needs to be worked through the system. It's either going to need to move from on-farm to off-farm. We have a 25-cent premium in our old crop bids as compared to 1st of November. So, you know, that is telling the farmer he probably should be moving it into the marketplace and looking at a re-ownership strategy there. And also farmers are severely under-marketed on new crop. Those $5 numbers just didn't last long enough.
How much erosion do you think will be in the basis by the time we get to the fall this year?
I won't, wouldn't be surprised that, say, Eddyville bid would be somewhere in the 35 to 50 under range here for a period of time.
And Merrill Crowley, do you have one last question for Ray?
After we see the lows in the basis, how much do you think we could see a rebound as we move out to, say, May and July?
Well, I think we're going to see a pretty significant basis snap post-harvest. It's pretty traditional in our marketplace here. We go from feast to famine and got a plant that needs to get fed there. So I think the first initial opportunity is for those that can avoid the harvest lows and just hang on for 6 or 8 weeks. But then once we get past the 1st of January, because farmers are going to be so far under-marketed, I can see that there's going to be a steady supply of corn to the market. So some of the carries that are in the marketplace today may even start to erode and go away.
Hey, Ray, one final question for you. Can you remind us of how big the plant you have is, what the throughput is, and what products you do produce?
So here in Eddyville, our plant grinds 265,000 bushels of corn per day. We produce high fructose corn syrup. We produce dextrose for across-the-fence customers that make amino acids and monosodium glutamate. And we also have a small ethanol plant.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us. We do appreciate it, Ray.
Thank you very much.
Ray Jenkins is at the Cargill plant in Eddyville, Iowa, joins us on this July 25 edition of Commodity Week. When we are back in just a moment, we'll take up the soybean market with our special panelist guest, Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons. This agricultural program is a production of Illinois Public Media. Up next, Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute with the weather forecast.
This past week in Illinois was 5 degrees below average, with very little rainfall except in the far southeast. The statewide average temperature for July so far is 70.6 degrees, which is 5 degrees below average. The statewide average rainfall is 3 inches, and that's about average for this point in July. The largest monthly rainfall totals were in the eastern half of the state, which are 1 to 2 inches above average. Meanwhile, there are several dry areas in the western half of the state, especially between St. Louis and Springfield and between Peoria and the Quad Cities, which are about 1 to 2 inches below average. The National Weather Service forecast for this weekend and next week indicates a brief warm-up on Saturday and Sunday with rain possible, and then a return to cooler weather in the upcoming week. Highs on Saturday will range from the upper 80s in the north to the low 90s in central and southern Illinois. As the cold front works its way across the state on Sunday, it will be cooler and less humid on the far northern part of the state, while still warm and humid in central and southern Illinois. Rainfall totals over the weekend will likely be an inch or less. Monday through Thursday will be cool and dry across the state with highs in the 70s in northern Illinois and in the low 80s in central and southern Illinois. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Our thanks, of course, to Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, Prairie Research Institute, for his weekly update of the weather forecast for the growing regions in the state of Illinois. Now, here are the settlement prices from the CME Group in Chicago on the weekly trade. Friday to Friday closes with the high and the low for the week. September corn, a high this week at $3.69. It traded to a low of $3.56.5. The settlement price at $3.63 for September corn. The lead option settled 8.25 cents lower. December contract, $3.71.75 settlement price. The harvest month down 6.75 cents for the week. August soybeans, $12.32.75 for the high. The low at $11.66. August settled 12.12 and a quarter in the bean pit, 35.5 cents higher. November at 10.83 and a half, a penny and 3/4 lower. August bean meal at $3.98, up $17.70, and August bean oil at $36.09, that's down 48 cents. September soft red winter wheat at $5.38, up 5.75 cents, and next year's harvest month, July of 2015, at $6.08 and a quarter in the soft red, up 3.25 cents. October live cattle at $159.80 on the week, finished $5.47.5 higher. August feeders at $218.25 were up $6.60, and October lean hogs finished at $107.27.5 with a $6.27.5 loss for the day. And that's a look at the numbers from the CME Group in Chicago. Remember, you can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This is the July 25 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's take up now the soybean market. We'll start with you, Daryl Dorkels. Soybeans across the United States are in good shape, but many are wondering whether that will last. How do you view this marketplace?
Well, you know, the beans themselves, as long as the weather forecasts hold up, we're going to have a good crop, just like in corn. You know, the only thing we're all really arguing about at this point when it comes to supply is how big. You know, and that's something that we'll see as an evolution over time. But the USDA report in August will give us at least some kind of an early guidance that we haven't had before, and I think give us a bit better picture. The thing with beans that I think people got to rely on and step back and take a look at is what our demand base can be going forward in this mix, because bean meal in particular, and I wrote about it in Farm Week this week, our new crop bean meal sales are just out of sight. You know, they are really good, and so that's going to create a fairly robust crush demand here as we start this new marketing year. So I think demand is actually more of a positive than supply is a negative.
Greg Johnson, despite what he says about demand being a positive, the United States Department of Agriculture has looked at it in the last WASDE report and said if the numbers come to fruition, we will have a very large carryout by historical standards, at least recent. Rather than in the 100s, we will be around 415 million. How much pressure will that continue to put on the marketplace?
It's going to put a fair amount of pressure on the market. I think Dale's right, though. USDA may have to bump up their demand numbers at some point in time, but I think we have to remember that once we know what the U.S. crop is this year, then all eyes turn towards South America, and corn prices down there are well below the cost of production. I think you're going to see increased acres out of South America, and if we don't start seeing a rally back in corn post-harvest here in the United States, we could see more corn or more bean acres out of the United States. So between a combination of a big crop in the U.S. this year, potentially big crop in South America next spring, and then potentially more acres out of the U.S., I think farmers would be well served to be defensive and get November 15 being sold regardless, you know, in spite of the fact that the demand is probably going to be better than what USDA is projecting at this point.
Now, are you thinking a similar function for making new crop sales of November 15 or the next year's crop sales, Merrill?
Yes, yes. Anything close to $11 could look very good. You know, and we're approaching $11 now. So on these demand-driven rally days, when the 14 crop goes up and the 15 tags along for the ride, I think those are opportunities both for the 14 and 15 crop. And I understand nobody knows what the Chinese demand is. Maybe we're selling a little too soon on the 14 crop, but the risk versus reward kind of tells me that I'd rather sell a little too soon than a little too late.
Your thoughts, Merrill Crowley?
Well, with prices in Brazil of corn running 210 or lower, and the current ratio of 2.8 to 1 out here in May, I would think that you're going to see a lot of the corn acres going to beans down there. Looks like the supply is going to be good. Everybody keeps trying to make an issue out of the weather here. I don't really see it. Looking at the differences between the weather maps from last year at this time to now and the cool weather, I just think that anything you can do to protect yourself this year and next is a wise choice.
And a very quick final word. We'll start with you, Dale Dirkholz.
Well, the one thing I keep in mind right here, and we've had commodities and price break, we're due for a semi-annual low in commodity indices right now.
Greg Johnson?
We've been down 9 out of the last 11 weeks in beans, 10 out of the last 11 weeks in corn, so we are due for a little bit of a bounce. But the fact that farmers haven't sold very much ahead concerns me and makes me think that we still have lower to go.
And very quickly, Merrill Crowley.
Yeah, I think that I agree with them. There's a bounce due. There's, like in beans, if you want to try to protect yourself, you can buy a 1080 no soybean put, sell $10 soybean put for about 30 cents.
And that wraps up Commodity Week.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
And it downs that went west this week. You know, and up in southwestern Minnesota, southern Minnesota, where they touched in up there, crops, you're still 2-3 weeks behind normal, and you've got to start worrying, are we going to have the back end this year for those crops to finish out?
Well, the meteorologist over at Allendale was talking about that, and he puts like a 25% probability of any kind of early frost. The one thing he said that was a caution sign was that if you have a cooler July than June, then it tends to kind of step up the odds of having one. But in most of the analog years he's looking at, it points to basically an average frost date.
You know, at this point, if it stays coolish in August, they can't even stand an average frost date up there without taking some bushels out of the mix. It isn't going to be big, don't get me wrong, but, you know, it still could be some that could do it. I think I worry more about that than anything is time to get it finished.
And when does the market really trade an early frost? I mean, if it's going to happen on September 20th, we won't trade it till September 15th. So
no, you're so right.
For the next 2 months, I mean, yeah, the potential's there, but I don't think we can really trade that.
I'm just saying that's, to me, the only weather risk we can play out in this game. You know, I don't see heat, dryness, anything else as really being a factor anymore.
Yeah,
I would concur.
Hey, Merrill, do you have the old George Lane shop up there in Watsika?
We did have. George passed a while back.
I knew him. I was up in Chicago for a few different years and worked with Sidney Madoff, so I'd met George along the way and got to know him a little bit.
Boy, yeah, that was a treat, I'm sure. I took a couple of his classes.
He was a character.
Oh, that's an understatement.
No, I just knew him on a personal level, you know. I never took any classes or anything from him, but that when I saw you were from Watsika, that was the first thing that came to mind because I know that's where George was from.
Yeah, I took a couple classes. Like I said, he was real interesting as far as you wouldn't get bored in class. And if somebody happened to get kind of halfway bored or go to sleep, he would almost scream out something, you know. And yeah, I'm glad I took the classes, learned things that I really didn't think I would.
You know, the one thing I wonder about, Todd, and I didn't mention it anywhere along the way in here, we're still at the end of a window from the way I count for a 40-week low in corn. And that just keeps me kind of like, what does all that mean? I also noted in bean meal, I was taking a look here today, there's in bean meal, because it's a little bit different than the beans, there's more of a regular 32-week cycle, low to low in bean meal, and we're right in that window for that, too. I'm not a bull in beans, don't get me wrong, Greg. If you get me back up somewhere over $11, I think we may even challenge the gap. I'd sell some more beans again. But,
yeah, they have a possibility, I think, around 1120 to 1130, somewhere up in there.
Yeah.
Well, with the big export program, I mean, it's all about order flow. The Chinese buy and the farmers don't want to sell because they don't know what they've got. So in the short run, we could go higher. You're right.
Right. But the other thing from a longer-term perspective, and I still have the beans have a cycle count due actually in their short-run count to the end of September. That also sets up as potentially being a three-year low, which I'm starting to wonder what kind of crop we're going to have in South America this coming year. Just something to keep in your mind. I'm still ultimately bearish and see November beans somewhere ticking below a $10 mark.
I didn't want to ask that question today.
Why?
But if it happens September 30th, I mean that just fits right in with the theory that, you know, we've made a low. I mean, if you get down that low into the fall, then chances are we can work a little bit higher.
Right.
Yeah, and with a seasonal bounce here because of concern of different matters with the weather, and if we have another export sales like we had this week, you know, that could provide the bounce to get up in that area, still go back down and meet your low for the longer-term cycle.
Yeah, I was on, I can't remember, but somebody heard me say that before the June 30th report that five of the last six we'd had limit moves after the, and some of them limit up, some limit down. But the guy called in and said, I heard you say that. Is there any follow-through? And I said, well, I don't know. And so I looked, and in all five of those years, whatever direction that report day was, 1 week later we were, you know, if let's say it was a bearish report, and we were down on June 30th. 1 week later we were lower, 1 month later we were lower, and 3 months later we were lower. So,
yeah
there's and this year, obviously 1 week after the report we were lower, 1 month after it we were lower, and I guess I would say 3 months after, you know, coming up here at the end of September, you know, I think we'll be lower than where we were 1 month after. So,
well, the one thing, it's still an overriding concern in the beans and even the bean meal. Historically, we're still trading high relative to the corn market.
Yeah.
And how long can that persist? You know, I'm not so sure it can stay with us at this point. You know, in the long haul, and that would argue that at some point, you know, we do have a give up into the fall or somewhere in there during harvest, you know, and bring it back to a little bit better relationship than what we're currently playing. And that's even looking at Dease corn, no beans. We're still high. Somewhere along the way,
don't you think corn tends to be supported to some degree because of the ethanol program?
Well, that's why I keep this whole thing with China and the DDGs, you know, and having been gone for a week, you know, and I came back and I'm looking at that story and I'm kind of like,
That's curious because they've already stopped issuing import permits. Why do they want to start doing playing this kind of a game?
I did like your thought process on that.
You know, I just looked at it, you know, being somewhat of a cynical contrarian at times, as something doesn't fit the picture here that you would otherwise expect. Because if they aren't issuing import permits, why start to even propose something like this? Makes no sense.
Could they be trying to push their prices higher? I know they're trying to support their prices higher because they're having a large crop.
But they're already extraordinarily high compared to imported prices. And the other thing they continually battle, and it's true when you get into their livestock sector, is that, you know, the high grain prices really are a problem for them in terms of profitability in their livestock industry. So, and, you know, they're always worried about food inflation as being a thorn. So why are you holding these grain prices artificially high at this point? You know, China's one thing that just, I think, puzzles us all 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I got to finish writing, guys.
Okay.
All right. Hey, good talking to you guys.
Hey, everybody okay if I use this on the web, too?
Sure.
Yeah, I have no problem.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Good talking to you guys.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.